Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
Welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is an online radio format designed to assist Building Families and Communities Institute in reaching a national audience. Our weekly topic focus on real issues confronting families and communities. Yours truly, Reverend Dockery, is the host, and we engage experts and individuals in various fields of study or occupational backgrounds to get their idea and their support in our national dialogue and discussion and provocative conversations. Additionally, the show serves as a catalyst for our nonprofit organization in sharing relevant information that we believe is most important to, again, our national audience. So we're grateful that you joined us tonight. If you're brand new, again, this podcast is a informational podcast, and we're offering information for the sake of empowering people with knowledge. You can join us here live in a live conversation at 657-383-0944. We welcome your questions, your comments, and your participation. If you're following us on Facebook, we thank you. And we appreciate you. We've just recently rolled that out. We appreciate your participation there and encourage you to take a step closer and join the conversation. Give us a call here. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. I have a very special guest tonight who I'm convinced have a very expert opinion, position on our topic tonight, which is nothing less than mama. My mama said, "You the man of this house." But I don't, the young man asked the question, "How do I put the fire out?" Mama said, "I'm the man of the house, but I want to know, how do I put the fire that's in the house out? I don't know enough." That's what we're going to speak from tonight. Too often, single parent mothers try to encourage their sons to be responsible. As a man, in the absence of pro-social masculine instruction, and as a consequence, they drive these young, naive males into three behavioral responses, one of three. That's either male assertiveness, which we'll speak of tonight in our monologue, male aggressiveness, or a fight-flight position. And again, Miss Cecilia Carter, who holds a master's degree, a Master of Arts degree, and she's a licensed professional counselor, and she is a therapist, an adolescent therapist. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I believe she has a significant contribution to our conversation. As usual, we'll have Pastor Ricky Waller, our regular in-house panelist, to join us as well. And we're looking forward to a very good, wholesome conversation. I don't want you to hesitate now. If you hear us and you some strike your interest, don't hesitate. Give us a call here, 657-383-0944. This is your conversation as well, and we welcome you to join us here. All right, having said that, I'm going to move on to our monologue because I'm anxious to get our guest going here. We want to give her more time. We have about an hour and a half in the show, and I certainly want to give her ample time to share her expertise. The title again being, My Mama Said, You the Man of This House. But how do I put the fire out? Ephesians, the 6th chapter, verse 4 reads, And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In the scenario of a young male being forced into the role of a man, assuming the responsibilities common for a husband or father figure, there is an obvious absence of functionality between his paternal and maternal parents who produced him. While the goal of healthy development for any boy aspiring to reach manhood is to prepare him to act in that role that we just mentioned. Without appropriate pro-social instruction and fatherhood development, a male can become overwhelmed under the circumstances aforementioned. One of the 8 stages of social development espoused by the behavioral psychologist Eric Erickson is initiative versus guilt. It's explained as thus. Initiative is a demonstration of confidence and personal ability. And generally after one has been introduced and coached or taught in a certain way, they develop a confidence in their ability to demonstrate what they've learned. Versus guilt, which is a feeling of doing something wrong as a result of making an attempt and failing at what you attempted to do, because what you were trying to do is generally worth praise. But somehow you got it wrong, like the subject of tonight. I've been told I'm in charge. I'm running the house, but the house is on fire. I don't have a clue as to how to put the fire out. Now, let's consider that a male child's creativity and his drive to be the best that he can be can either be expanded or stifled by the outcomes of being set up for initiative or guilt. After 2 decades of work and study in the area of male development, in 2006, I penned a workbook entitled A Framework for Fatherly Instructions, Understanding the Male Growth Process. Following the qualitative tradition of research, I use observation and participation to document case studies of over 1,000 male subjects of whom I've worked with either directly or indirectly. Now, based on my experiences over the last 25 years as a man, a father, as an educator in a public school setting, as a pastor for 2 decades plus, as a nonprofit founder and director, and as a community advocate, I've come to conclude the following. And this is where we're going to speak from tonight. As a pre-adolescent male grows physically and emotionally, there is a normal and often unconscious transition that he experiences from what I call in my workbook the boyhood stage. This transition has its own identifying characteristics, When the pre-adolescent male is exposed to suggestions for pro-social development, he has all the instructional preparations for what I term positive male assertiveness, which is confidence in masculine ability and potential during social interactions, which should be taught by a father or a trusted father figure to a son. On the other hand, in the absence, when a pre-adolescent male lacks proper guidance, he is most likely to display what I term negative or male aggressiveness. By that we mean hostile or exploitive masculine behavior during his social interactions with other people. Now, one of these two experiences can follow this male all the way through latency and chronological adulthood. And oftentimes, if the pressure is too hard, they will take flight. They experience fight and flight. Either they'll fight against you or they'll run from the home or from those who are pressuring them. In this case, we're talking about the single parent mom who simply believes that the child should assume this role and help them out. But you can cause them to run away from you. You can cause them to respond in an aggressive manner or an assertive manner. Let me just share with you from my workbook a table here, or a construct, conceptual framework that we have. And we look at the growth cycle, which is a chronological thing. It's identified by a chronological stage of birth, from birth on. Then we look at what I identify as suggestions for pro-social development for males, and we're looking from zero, from birth to 12 years old, okay? And I introduce this because it's important, I believe, that we understand what are some of the things you should focus on, a father should focus on, ensuring that their children get successful. And largely this is based on, again, my research, personal experience, being a supervisor in a state detention facility and working with young men as a public school teacher and other capacities, and more importantly, being a father myself of a son. Okay? So looking at it from conception to or birth to 3 years of age, I call this the physical dependency stage. Physical because naturally, literally, a child needs somebody to pick it up, to change its diaper, to feed it, to rock it, and all those things, because they certainly at birth they're not able to do so. And as they grow older, they learn to walk and things of that nature, but from the birth they're incapable of doing that. Well, in this physical dependency stage, the father, I'm talking about the father now. Now, I think some people were looking for us to kind of beat up on women. That's not the focus tonight. The point is to understand why you're a single parent and what's wrong with this notion, this position you take that you're going to make your son a man. But we'll get back to that, and my expert is going to help us with that too. All right. So pro-social development necessary between 0 and 12. The father should participate in the day-to-day care for the male child. I just mentioned child needs somebody to carry it, to feed it. It's important that that child recognize that father's voice of authority that will stay with him for the rest of his life. It's good that mother's there, and she breastfeeds, she nurtures, but dad, you need to be there too. And often what happens is people exchange time for dollars, basically, and they don't have time to be there for their sons. So they lose a very viable and positive, important connection, and that's the trust phase. At birth, introduce the male child to a masculine voice of authority, as I just mentioned. Allow the male child to see, as they grow up, how a man responds to a woman, that being his mother or sisters, other males, and in social surroundings. The male child should be reared in a well-structured home environment, free from negative, destructive influences. Appropriate social behavior should be modeled before this child by not just the mother, but by the father as well. See, whatever benchmarks or standards you set for your children, that's what they're going to strive to reach, because what they want is your praise and your recognition. If you don't give it to them, they'll go to the streets and get it. All right, I don't want to get ahead of myself now. I don't want to get ahead of myself. The male child should be coached through age-appropriate activities that help build him socially and his character. Okay? The lead role in this instruction is the father. Now, let's look at from 4 years old to 12. Now, it's my understanding that somewhere between 5 and 6 is where males and females identify with their gender. And later, between about 9 years old, 5 and 9 years old, these life experiences have a tendency to follow them, and they remember them, have an impact on their decision-making later on, even as an adolescent or a teen and a young adult and so forth and so on. All right, so what I'm suggesting is that if these seeds are planted early in the growth and development, your child has, particularly your son, has a better chance of healthy transition from boyhood to manhood. Okay. Number one, the male child should be exposed to and coached through age-appropriate challenges requiring him to be responsible and accountable. No, I'm not saying you should be light on him. He should be challenged, but you should shadow him through those challenges so that he doesn't fail and lose confidence in himself. But you be right there with him, explain it to him, and walk him through it. The male child should be taught how to appropriately interact with the opposite sex. Certainly as he gets older, there are certain ways you don't engage mama. You don't walk in on mama in the bathroom or in the bedroom or your sisters or your grandmama, your auntie. Yes, you're close to them, they love you, but there's a way you show respect. You began this process, and the man, the father, by example and word and action, teaches the son the same thing. Male child should be introduced to the concept of a chain of command. Can't nobody tell me nothing. I'm my own man. Well, don't you know that we all need somebody if it's nothing but to give us a decent interment when we die? Oh, yeah, somebody going to tell you what to do. And a father should teach you to know how and when to appropriately respond. All right? The male child should be exposed to various aspects of development, or developing, rather, networking ties in social settings. In other words, building healthy pro-social relationships with other people. Because it's true that no man is an island that can stand alone. And if you're going to be successful in this world, you're going to have to learn how to get along with other people. Okay? The male should be afforded opportunities to participate in relevant religious and cultural ceremonies. One thing that young boys got to learn, that if a man doesn't have anything by which he convicts himself to, it's difficult, if not impossible, to trust him with anything, including a relationship. Okay? The male should be taught about his physical strengths and limitations. Excuse me. Too often, young men take on more than they can handle because their imagination tells them they're bigger and badder than what they think they are. When life smacks them and knocks them down to the ground, then they think there's something wrong with them. Problem is, they lack the pro-social instruction at the appropriate age. All right? Lastly, the male child should be orientated to civic and international expectations. In other words, as a citizen of the United States or the state or the local municipality you live in, there are expectations. One of the reasons so many of our young men get caught up in the criminal justice system is because not only them, but their parents lack an understanding of civic expectations. When you leave the house, society expects you to understand and appropriately respond to certain things in the general society. Now, There is a young man by the name of Kendrick Lamar. He's a rap artist, and he has a video out. And in the video, a dad is teaching his son how to fight at an early age. So he hits the boy, and the little boy is standing there learning how to fight. Well, in the progression of the video, the little boy eventually comes to not only hit the daddy back, but to beat him to a bloody pulp. And then the next thing you know, the little boy is always talking about fighting with people. And he says that if I'm going to smack a nigga, I'm going to make it sexy. That's what he said. We're using this as a part of our case study here, okay? Let me share with you a little excerpt from that, and I tried to clean this up as best I can. And after which, we're going to bring our guest in, Ms. Cecilia Carter, who is an adolescent therapist out of the St. Louis area. All right, in just a minute.
Ain't nobody praying for me. Y'all know what happens on earth stays on earth. Here we go.
I'm willing to die for this shit. I done cried for this shit. Might take a lie for this shit. Put the Bible down and go out for a knife for this shit. D.O.T., my enemy, won't catch a vibe for this shit. Aye, I've been stuffed out in front of my mama. My daddy commissary made it to commas. Bitch, y'all, my grandma's dead. So ain't nobody praying for me. I'm on your head. Aye, 30 minutes later, no defense watching. I see on my telegram like, be cautious. I be hanging out at Tams. I be on Stockton. I don't do it for the gram. I do it for Compton. I'm willing to die for the shit, nigga. I take your fucking life for the shit, nigga. We ain't going back to broke. Family selling dope. That's why you mini-ass rap niggas better know.
The title of the show tonight, my mama said, you're the man of this house. How do I put the fire out? Our guest tonight is Ms. Cecilia Carter, a adolescent therapist out of St. Louis, Missouri area. Good evening, ma'am. How are you?
Good evening, Reverend Dockery. How are you?
Mighty fine. And welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do on a daily basis. And then I want to ask you some questions about our monologue and the topic for tonight.
Sure. Yes, my name is Cecilia Carter. I was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. I went on to undergraduate school at Southern Illinois University, Evansville. I received my undergraduate degree in sociology with a minor in psychology. And so I went on to graduate school, Webster University, where I received my counseling, a master's degree in counseling, and my specific field of study is marriage, family, and children. So I currently work as a licensed therapist, and I go into the inner city schools, and I provide individual and group therapy. The demographic that I currently work with are those who have experienced some type of trauma. So whether it's community violence, domestic violence, inner partner violence, or sexual assault or sexual abuse. So that's the majority of the population that I've been working with for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very relevant work. Yes, ma'am. Well, wow. We got the right one tonight. We got the right one, baby. Let me recognize callers that are online. We will refer to you by the first 3 digits of your phone number and the last 4 digits, unless you like to offer your name and the conversation. But we got 678-0405 on with us. We recognize you. Welcome to the show, as well as 615-1098. I think we know 1098. We had Pastor Wall. I'm not sure what happened. We lost him here. Hopefully he'll get back with us here sooner than later. Okay. I'm coming to you, 678. Give me a second. Let me give our guest opportunity to kind of share. Now, you heard our monologue, And let me just say, listen, audience, that Miss Carter is responsible for this topic tonight. She, thank you for being a member in our group. And she actually threw some things on Facebook, put some thoughts out there that really kind of opened up some relevant dialogue. As you know, it's been a year now. We have over 100 episodes, and we've talked a few times in some of those prior episodes related to this subject here, but not specifically talking about mothers who say that their son got to be the man of the house. The question was, is that hurting them or is that helping them? Is that detrimental? So based on the monologue, will you speak to that a little bit, Ms. Carter?
Sure. I think that you hit the nail right on the head. This idea that we're forcing this manhood or this responsibility on these young men who don't have the tools and who don't understand what it is to be the man of the house. I think when mothers are in these situations where, and I completely understand, where they feel like they need the support, they need the help, and, you know, their partners have left and they're in the home by themselves and they're trying to gain some support, I think it's harmful to gain that support from a child. And unfortunately, it happens all too often where the young man is sitting there and is told, he has to be the man of the house. And that forces responsibilities on him that he's not able to fulfill. And doing so, he's set up for failure. You know, he goes to attempt to do these things that a man should be able to do. And when he does not accomplish those goals, he feels bad. And he loses his self-confidence, and he may act out in ways that are unhealthy because of the Lord, this Lord self-esteem that he gets from going out to reach these goals that are not accomplishable for him.
Right. And sometimes mama gets mad at him too, doesn't she?
Sure she does. And she's frustrated, and it makes sense. You know, all too often we have parents who get into these circumstances where, you know, they think that they have a dependable spouse or father for their
right.
children, and he leaves or whatever the circumstance is, and they're left alone. And, you know, as we get into the questions that you have posted, I think it's important that we recognize that, yes, that is a situation, that is the current situation, but that doesn't have to be the complete story. And so being able to recognize where the resources are to be able to create a community that provides that mother support to help raise her son, I think is very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. All right. If you don't mind, let me offer 0405. An opportunity. And you've been listening to us. Any comment, questions, caller? Welcome to Talk Straight. Six 78. Are you there? Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry.
We can't hear you too well. Can you speak in your phone directly?
I'm sorry about that. I'm driving, and I had you on Bluetooth.
Okay.
I'm Nicole
okay.
from this week with Pastor Waller.
How you doing? Hey, Nicole, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Well, welcome
thank
back.
God. I am
back.
Yes,
any
sir.
Comments or questions thus far?
At this present time, sir, I just got in. I'm still listening.
Okay, great deal. 1098, how you doing, sir? Good to see you again. I know you've been busy.
Good.
Welcome back.
Yes,
any question, comments so far?
I was listening to Miss Cecilia speaking. I've always, you know, heard of telling someone that they're the man of the house. Well, myself coming up, I never experienced that, and I was, you know, with one parent for quite some time, and it was stated she was the woman of the house.
Okay.
This is something that basically, I don't know, reaches back into time during the planting of the fields and things of that nature. Being a man of the house, as Mr. Steele stated, that stuff will fail you anyway, because, you know, I mean, that's just, it doesn't, it's not realistic to me. You know, I mean, just the sound of it, you know, I didn't come out of an environment like that. You know, it just, it's unrealistic, a grown woman telling her son, you are the man of the house now. No. You know, that's not, I mean, it's unrealistic. So, I'm, you know, I just hold and listen.
Okay, and, okay.
You
okay.
know, it's failure.
You know, and I want to emphasize that there are a lot, as Ms. Carter said, a lot of women are struggling. They're literally struggling. And they're in it over their head. And especially when your son get up to be a certain size and you expect them to be able to do certain things, psychologically, would you agree with me, Ms. Carter, that sometimes you bring yourself, okay, he can do a little more. He'll be all right. He's going to have to, because I'm struggling. He's going to have to struggle. What do you think, Ms. Carter?
Absolutely. And I think it's more prevalent in those situations where there's poverty involved and there are not a lot of resources. Oh. And so you don't have a lot of help. You don't have outside help. And so you have to be able to pull from within. And sometimes pulling from within is pulling your 12-year-old son up to say, okay, you're going to have to make sure that we're protected in the house. It's your responsibility to make sure that your sister does what she's supposed to do. It's your responsibility to go out there and help me get money and to, you know, so that we can have food on the table. And unfortunately, I hear this story so many times. And you said that one of my Facebook statuses is what, you know, started this or contributed to this conversation. And the truth is one day I was sitting and I was just so frustrated. Of course, everything that I speak about my clients is confidential.
Sure.
So I can't give any names or any any identifying information. But there were several times where I had like 13, 14-year-old and one 12-year-old boy who came in who was flustered because his father was not doing what he was supposed to be doing, and his mother told him, "You're now the man of the house," and he felt like he had to be the man of the house. So when his father wasn't doing the right thing, he fought his father to protect his mother.
Wow.
In that moment, he had to fight his father to protect his mother, and then at some point, he had to be reminded that he was a child. How confusing is that? So when he goes to school and he believes that, you know, I am the big bad guy like you spoke of, and I don't have to listen to anybody, but the teacher says you have to sit down and you have to follow the rules. At home, I don't have to follow any rules. Why do I have to listen to you? That's a setup for failure. And mom doesn't understand that it's confusing to her son.
This story goes on and on.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. I saw that a lot when I taught in the public school system, where young people were forced to make many adult-like decisions. And then there we were, as the teacher and the principal and the school counselor, trying to calm them down so they can be a child. They didn't have time for that because they were in what? Adult mode all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when they were not at school, at least anyway. Okay, I wanted to ask you about the fellow we just heard, Kendrick Lamar, his song. The song is called Element. And what he's saying is people force him to element. Now, I don't know if he realizes, but really the element is the condition of a naive boy who may be chronologically grown and looks fierce and muscular, but is really a child in a man's body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He says that nobody's praying for me, so he's going to throw the Bible away. Right? Now, I'm a preacher. Sometimes we try to encourage people to trust God, right? But in the circumstance and reality of these young men, God is not an option for them. The Bible and its instruction is not an option for them. Ain't no need to bring that to them because you're going to come up short. Okay? He went on to say that, listen, normally, Big Mama is the one we look to, right? Well, Big Mama dead. My mama sold me out and gave my stuff to my daddy's commissary. I'm angry now, right? I've lost all respect and trust for mama, and I never had it for daddy. The question, one of the questions that we posed in the Facebook post is, what is the ideal circumstance for rearing a male child? Now, some people may say, well, why don't we focus on females? That's important. Tonight we're talking about mamas telling their son, you're the man of the house. House is on fire, and he don't have a clue where to start putting it out. What is the ideal situation? Give me your ideas about that, Ms. Carter, for raising a male child. And before you start, the number is 657-383-0944. Please join us. Give us a call. We love to entertain your question and comments. And our callers that are online with us, feel free to jump in here. All right, Ms. Carter, go ahead.
Sure, and if I may speak a little to what Kendrick Lamar was talking about, what I heard was a young man who was in fight or flight, but instead of flying or moving away, he fought. He was in a situation where he was not seen, not heard, and so he decided that he had to fight for what he needed or for what he wanted. And unfortunately, fighting also meant having to fight his father. And that's the problem. In a lot of these homes is that these children are in fight or flight. When we talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, I can't listen to you talk to me about the Bible or what God can do for me if I don't have my basic needs for survival, which is food, shelter, and safety. And so that young man was saying, I'm alone. I'm out here in this world by myself, and I have to fight to make it. And so that's what he did.
Isn't that amazing how that works out? You know, I know you've seen this 1098. What are your thoughts on that, man?
Well, psychological counseling, starting with mommy, and then go get daddy.
Then go
psychological
get
counseling. Okay. See, you know, like a thing is this, you know, it was wrong to even put a child in a position like that. Why couldn't she try to better herself? Now, you know, I have older sisters and older brothers. Couldn't tell me nothing, and I mean nothing. You know, mama home, no, you watch yourself, don't watch me. You know, my mother never put that on any of us, you know. And, you know, as stated, mommy needed some psychological help as well as daddy. And I hope that's all I can say on that.
Ms. Carter, do you think, now as a social scientist and in my research, I've drawn some conclusions, but I'm just curious, do you think that there is a greater need for more ethnocentric studies in this area of counseling that is ethnically consistent with certain realities, particularly with the African-American subculture? Do you think there's a need for more study there, or is the studies that's been done on other ethnicities, primarily Caucasian or the dominant group, is that sufficient for us to make adequate treatment decisions with?
Absolutely. I think that the need for specialty work in African-American communities is important, just like there is a need for African-American therapists, social workers, scientists, just because it's a cultural understanding. As a therapist, I can get closer to, not to say that white or Asian or Mexican therapists can't, but there's a door that's automatically open. Once that client walks in and sees me and knows that I understand their background and the struggles that they're facing. There is a definite need for more specific understanding around cultural phenomena within African American communities. As a community, we're a tribal community by nature. So the way that we communicate with one another, the way that the assumed positions within the family and how we speak to one another is all a part of our culture. And if an outside person coming in says this is the way it should be, they're speaking on their bias. They're speaking from their ethnocentrism, their specific background versus acknowledging the background that of the person that they're speaking with.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, Ms. Carter. So you know how it is, even with an African-American subculture. When a family member starts to instill certain pro-social values with their children and they go with their relatives and what have you, the first thing they say is, oh, you trying to act white. Huh? We don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do none of that, man. Ain't nobody trying to pay attention to that. You trying to act like you white. What about that?
Well, unfortunately, that's a problem. Go ahead.
Hold one second.
I'm sorry.
678. Coming right back to you. 1 second, 678. Go ahead, Ms. Carter.
Okay. Unfortunately, I think that's a problem overarching within the African American community, but I would say more specifically, I think it's a problem with those of lower socioeconomic statuses. It's this culture of poverty. And so we grab on to these ideas of what it is to be white, what it is to be wrong. But the more you learn, the more you understand. When you know better, you do better. So I learned that maybe yelling at my son is not the appropriate way. If I'm frustrated, now in a single parent household and I'm doing everything by myself and I don't have a husband and I'm coming home from work and my son is doing whatever and I'm frustrated, yes, I'm more likely to yell and scream at him. But if I have a safe foundation, if I have a sturdy foundation where my husband is there and we're both working and we have created space for us both to support our child, I have a little bit more tolerance and I can sit down and communicate with my child so that I'm not yelling with him. Is that white? No. Is that learning how to have healthy communication with my son? Yes.
Right. Wow. Okay. Go ahead, 678. Let's hear from you.
Well, speaking from my standpoint, I can relate because, for one, I just feel like it's always, it's like a bad crush there due to the fact of the matter. That's crazy. That's insane. That's not the American way. That's not the way that you should do things. Anything, you know, if you seeking for counseling or something healthy, such as counseling, because counseling and therapy and stuff is healthy, but to some black cultures, it's crazy. It's insane. It's very out of line. You know, you see what I'm saying? Because that's what we was always told and what we was raised on. We was raised on that's not healthy. That's out of line. We don't need these white folks, let alone anybody else in our business. What goes on in here stays in here. That's what it should be. You shouldn't be go talking to nobody. Anything, you got something to talk about, you come to me. How can I talk to you when you got your mind is not right? You know what I'm saying? You need some help just as much as I do, you know, but we don't look at it like that.
That's so
true. Because we feel like we know everything.
Right. And you know, Nicole, if I might add to what you're saying, what we don't know, we take it to God and say God will take care of it. And what we don't want to do and want to be responsible for, we blame it on the devil. So we use our theological perspective as a clutch and as a excuse not to embrace, as you're saying, in a very natural sense, the need for certain pro-social changes or emotional support and psychological counseling and things of that nature. Very interesting dynamic. But I wouldn't say, now somebody's going to say, well, Hispanics have their problems and white people have it. That's true. Tonight, we have identified a certain character that is very common, and tell me if I'm wrong, Ms. Carter, largely in the inner city or within the Afro-American experience. Would you agree or disagree
Absolutely.
With that?
I agree with that, and I would space it out to say even more across races, this idea of poverty, because we know that black folks are not the only ones who are impoverished.
Of course.
And so, you know, across this socioeconomic status of people, I think that's what we should be focusing on. Now, unfortunately, there is a larger demographic of African Americans who fit into that pocket of poverty. Now, can I speak to something that the young lady said?
Absolutely.
So I think It is, growing up, I heard that a lot. What goes on in my mama's house, stay in my house. You don't tell my business. The problem is, and if I find out you're telling my business, you're going to have a problem. I think the issue with that is that I think the problem with that is that the power is in the secrecy. If we don't bust open secrets and allow for some learning and some understanding, the problem is just going to keep on going. And that cycle of poverty is going to continue to go round and round versus acknowledging maybe there is a problem here. Maybe there is a problem with the way that I am treating my son. Maybe this idea of, I'm sure we're going to talk about later, but this idea of toxic masculinity and the way we put these ideas on our male child, on our male children, it's hurting them. And it's causing them to suffer from depression and suicidality and all of these things. But because we're used to do it, we continue to do it anyway.
Right, right. You know what? That was a great segue to the next question that I was going to pose to you and open up to our listening audience. And before I do that, let me again invite those of you that may be listening. Thank you, Facebook group, for your participation there. Feel free to give us a call, 657-383-0944. We have a few more minutes here, about another 45 minutes or so. Join us in the conversation. We're grateful to have with us our guest tonight on Talk Straight, Ms. Cecilia Carter, in case you're just joining us, who is an adolescent therapist out of the St. Louis, Missouri area. And Nicole has joined us, and my good friend, Brother Outcast, has been with us here. I don't know what happened to Pastor Waller, but hopefully he'll get back with us there. Nonetheless, so that was a good segue, Ms. Carter. And the question is, how should a single parent mother rearing a male child approach that male child's social, emotional, developmental needs or development? Any suggestions on how one to do that? You're a single mother, you're struggling, you're trying to feed them and clothe them, you know what I mean? You ain't got much time to hug them and say, I love you, because you're busy, you want to sleep and everything.
Sure. So I think the first part is being able to identify your strengths within the community. So being able to build a community of healthy men who can influence and teach your son what manhood is. That's number one. I think number two is, to specifically answer your question, I think that we should give our sons the same emotional space, the same emotional vulnerabilities that we give our daughters. We should be able to provide a safe space for them to express their feelings, their thoughts, their concerns, and not be judged on it. So when they come, just like if we talk about mirroring and understanding the mother and the father's role in their children's life, when the father comes home and the world has beat him up, his wife is there to support him, to listen to him, to patch him back up and send him back into the world. That's the same thing that a mother does. She doesn't say, oh, be a man, don't cry about that. She gives him the space to get whatever that he needs from her. And so the other thing too is not imposing, like I said before, this idea of toxic masculinity. And I use that loosely because they have a lot of different ideas of what that is. But I'm using it in this, for the sake of this conversation, the idea of this narrow idea of what masculinity is supposed to be. You know, in American society, we think, oh, either you're the hypersexual man. You're not a man unless you've laid 50 ticks, or the sports guy. You're not the all-around basketball guy or the football guy or this warrior guy who's this ultra-masculine macho guy. When we push those ideas on our sons and don't give them the space to be able to be different, to be the guy who just likes to sing or the guy who likes to read, we push them in a space where they're uncomfortable and they may not be able to deal with that and have the emotional support. And so that's when we start seeing those higher rates of depression, of suicidality. They get on the college campus, and because they're forced by their peers, they start doing the binge drinking. So I think to ensure, because I can go on and on, ensure I think is we have to give them the space to express themselves and be okay and say it's okay to cry and have his father tell him it's okay to not feel good. It's okay to be upset because your friend is not your friend anymore.
So you raised a pretty good and significant issue, and perhaps you couldn't say this, but as a man, I will. There's an assumption, and correct me if I'm wrong, 1098,
mm-hmm.
but there's an assumption that once you reach a certain chronological age or years, life, and you've been around, that you understand already what it means to be a man. I say that to say that culturally, subculturally, for the African-American subculture in particular, I'm not sure, Ms. Carter, that we have a very clear, healthy definition of what it means to be a man.
And I agree.
That leaves many fathers confused. Let me rephrase. That leaves many people confused about what to teach their sons.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of being a good athlete or entertainer or working real hard and saying it's my way or the highway. So it's difficult for
mm-hmm.
a young boy understand exactly what are the benchmarks, what are the steps. And that's what we strive to achieve in my workbook that I made reference to in a monologue, a framework for fatherly instruction. There are some basic things that all of us can teach our sons that will be healthy for them in their growth and development. Some things they're going to pick up on their own, right? And time is going to teach them, but
mm-hmm.
there are some specific things that they need to be prepared to look out for and how to avoid the pitfalls that we may coming up. So, but I appreciate you saying it. Nicole, what do you think about that?
Well, I know me personally, I can relate to it a whole lot, but I know our biggest thing is, you know, I just feel like that we have babied our men too much sometimes. I feel like that we have babied our men. Yes, because
Hold on one second, Outcast. I'm gonna get you, Outcast. Go ahead, finish, Nicole.
I mean, can I speak from what I've seen standpoint? But
sure.
I feel like we have babied our men too much because some of them we are not allowing them to grow up to be men. You understand what I'm saying? Because the women are taking care of the men and the mothers still taking care of their sons. And that's the reason why half of them don't want to get jobs and stuff or do nothing for themselves.
Wow.
They used to women doing everything for them. And I mean, it's going to become a big crutch to the point they just feel like that's, you know, I mean, they can have their way. I mean,
now, Nicole, there's a counter argument, okay? Hold on.
So,
I hear you.
Okay.
You're on the money.
I can relate. I can relate to that,
okay.
but I mean, it's pretty much some of it. I bet 99.95%
okay. right.
I'm going to
right. Hey, I can't take that from you. Outcast, give it to me, man. Talk to me straight.
Okay.
Talk to me straight.
All right. All right, now, here I go. Now, I beg your help. I said, I kept saying some men.
Okay.
Now,
okay.
Now, you know, my last two daughters, I reared them myself. Now, I could say all women, you know, are no good, lazy, and things in this, but I would not go there because that is totally wrong. Some men.
Absolutely.
You know, I worked, paid my rent. I didn't ask nobody for a doggone cent. You know, 2 and 3 jobs. Now, a lot of women are lazy. They're lazy.
Okay.
Welfare.
True.
Don't want to work.
True.
A lot of them. Some, not
mm-hmm.
all.
You are.
You know, some. You know, now you can't say all men are lazy. You know, I left my
mom's
house when I was 18.
No, I don't mean it like that. I don't mean it
And she taught me to be a man. She taught me to take care of myself. Do not depend on a woman. Don't lie up on a woman. Always keep your job. My mother,
mm-hmm.
she's dead
mm-hmm.
now. But she, you know what? It's something that she told me when I was 18 that always stuck. She said, son,
okay.
don't lie up on a woman and depend on her to do anything for you because it
mm-hmm.
could be snowing. Ice could be on the ground. You don't have
mm-hmm.
a job. She takes care of you. If she said, get out, you got to go. Now the thing
Uh-oh.
Is, these women that let these men do that, they need some psychological help. I hope.
Okay.
You right about
Carter.
That. You right.
Can I say something?
Yes.
Hello?
Help me out, Miss Carter. Help me out.
So one of the things is this, is that when I say give them the emotional space, I don't mean baby them. I mean if he's upset, then give him the space to come home and say, Mama, I'm upset about what happened. If he needs to cry to get that out to be able to express himself, that's okay. Now, that does not mean that in behavior that I tell him, Mama's going to do everything for you. There's a difference between allowing him to express himself emotionally and requiring him to hold responsibilities within the household that are age appropriate. Those are two different things. And I think part of the problem is the, now some people might get mad at me for this, but the breakdown within within the African American community, during the 40s, 50s, and the 60s, that was the largest rate of two parent home families within the African American community. Somewhere there was a breakdown, and somewhere we were taught that baby daddies and mama baby mamas was the norm, and because of that, we weren't taught how to be a mother. We weren't taught how to be a father. We weren't taught how to be a wife or a husband. And so then, like you said, we got people out here who are trying to just, you know, we're faking it until we make it. And the problem is that when someone comes in and says, guys, this is not the way, then it's all, you think you know, but the truth is even if I'm not faking it, the statistics say that it's not working.
Right. You know, if I might, Ms. Carter, Patrick Daniel Moynihan was a senator in 1965, and what he said that if you really want to help the black community in 65, Carter, he says empower the black male to become responsible as a man with jobs and work opportunities. Well,
absolutely.
They did exactly opposite in legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it possible for women to get more welfare and government housing and things of that nature, and it excluded the male, right? Well,
absolutely.
From 1970 on, Andrew Billingsley wrote a book about black families in America, and he detailed the progressive destruction or decline of the African American family from 1970 on, and in 2017. It's spot on right now. Families are just, not all of them, but many of them are just total decay. And the bottom line is that you're right. The idea of a healthy father and a mother, husband and wife, there are young ladies now that will tell you, I don't want to get married. I want a baby, but I don't want to be married. Well, that's problematic. Do you got that? Pastor Wall, are you there with us? Pastor Wallace? It looks like I hear him, but.
And excuse me, but I wasn't trying to be, I wasn't trying to point the finger at everybody. I mean, all men is like that. I know all men are not like
that,
but I was just saying because I have experienced a lot of it, you know, and I've seen that. So.
Okay. Okay. Nicole, we appreciate your contribution to the conversation. Let me say that. I believe Outcast will second me on that. Huh?
But you know, women that baby men like that, again, they need some psychological help. Honestly, they do.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I mean, you can't live on love. Love don't pay no bills. I mean, what size is it they don't understand? You know, I mean, I don't get it. You know,
what?
I mean, they need some psychological help. Help me out, Mr. Sayer.
I mean,
a lot of those women who accept those types of relationships are daddyless daughters. Their fathers weren't in the home to tell them, hey, you don't allow a man to treat you like that. And it's not a dire situation because the truth is my father wasn't in my home either. But I learned was when you know better, you do better. When you're exposed to different things, you grasp to it, and you take what you need and you leave what you don't. Too many times we are stuck in tradition and we say, no, I'm not going to listen to that because my grandma and my auntie did this.
So being able to say, well, that's not healthy, that ain't work for her, that ain't work for her, and that didn't work for her, so I'm going to do something different.
Exactly. Okay.
But don't hate me
because
we call three or four
things. What you say? I didn't hear that part.
Hold on. Somebody wanted to add one more thing. Go ahead.
Yes. I was talking about toxic masculinity earlier and how it affects our young boys. If anybody has an opportunity, I saw this documentary that was absolutely amazing. It made me kind of think about the way that I treat my own son. The documentary is on Netflix. It's called The Mask We Live In, and it's a documentary where this urban educated African-American guy went into these urban settings and had these real one-on-one conversations with these African-American, Hispanic, and different types of youth, and talked to them about what it meant to have these pressures of being a certain type of masculine. And it exposed a lot. And I think it would be a really good watch if anybody had a chance to watch it.
Okay. Great point. I wanted to offer as well, Ms. Carter, some literary works that some people can look at if you in your leisure time. Naam Akbar is a very powerful author nationally that's well known, and he's done a lot of great work. He has a book entitled Visions for Black Men, and I think it's an important that you should take a minute to look at. Kanjufu, Motivating and Preparing Black Youth to Work. That's another very important work. And, of course, Harriet McAdoo talks about upward mobility for parents and things of that nature. It would be great, Ms. Carter, if we can permeate our neighborhoods and even our churches to teach these things and encourage this type of literary quest. And you understand what I'm saying? Sometimes people say, well, they should teach that in school. Well, they don't. So we should teach it at home and in our community setting. But what we learned the other day is that we have more neighborhoods than we have communities because we're not controlling the economy. We're not controlling the education. We're not controlling the social orientation of the communities that we say we live in. So we have neighborhoods. And Dr. Anderson made it very clear that we run the neighbor out of the hood, so all you got now is a hood. But there's work to be done.
That makes a lot of
sense. There's work to be done. Let me get this last question. We got 27 minutes. Time is flying. Pastor Waller, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I tell you, I've been doing some work out here. I try to get a chance to mention it to you. But it was a last-minute call, man, where someone had
gotten
down, and then I had to respond to them when they called me to come, and I went on and made the move. I said, well, I'll get back on as soon as I could, man. So I just thank you for understanding that.
Yes, sir.
These kids are still gunning each other down, and that's the call that I got. So I wanted to let you know, brother. I'm sure that things are going well.
Okay. We appreciate you. Let me do this then. Ms. Carter is our guest tonight.
Yes, sir.
Cecilia Carter.
Okay.
She is an adolescent therapist out of the St. Louis, Missouri area. We're talking from the topic. My mama said, "You the man of this house. House is on fire.
Okay.
Young man won't know where do I start putting the fire out." Because I ain't learned nothing about being no man, this house or nobody else's house. I don't even know how to be a man of myself, you know. Bone Thugs and Harmony took a gospel song and made a truth out of it. Ms. Carter, I want you to listen to it. And on the other side, I want to pose the last question for the show to you and get your feedback on it, if that's all right, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go.
23:24. We well know, O Lord, that to earthly man his way does not belong. It does not belong to man who is walking even to direct his steps. Direct me, O Jehovah. However, with judgment, not
Get a lot of it, but from what I from the pieces that I understood, it sounded like they were saying that they have to use their direction from God in the way that they see fit, and the way that they see fit is going out there hustling, doing what they need to do in order to survive.
So wait a minute now, do we trust God or do we trust our hustle? Which one?
Well, I think it depends on what perspective that you're coming from.
Okay.
From my own perspective, I believe that we should trust God. And I'm safe, and I have access to resources, and I have the things that I need. Now, if I was a child who was 13 years old, God is not coming down to save me in this exact moment, somebody who comes to me and says, I'll give you food if you shoot this gun, that might be God for them in that moment.
Now, you watch out now, Ms. Carter. You about to start something up in there. Listen. That brings me to this question that I want to pose to you. Nicole, you still there? Nicole? Okay, it looks like she's still online. All right, so watch this, Miss. Okay, all right, Nicole. Just stay with us, Nicole. So watch this, Miss Carter. The question is, ideally, where does the paternal parent or the daddy factor into supporting an out-of-control male? Now, you made a great point that when there is an absence of a father figure and there's an absence of the church, the street becomes daddy, and it becomes the primary basis of instruction. Now, so answer that for me. What role... And it's okay if you just go there. If you want to step on my toes, you're so pretty, I'm going to say ouch and just leave it alone, okay? So what role does daddy play in trying to get these little boys off the street, get them straight?
Well, I think it's two things that we need to acknowledge. First, we want to be preventative instead of reactionary. So if the father was consistent in the boy's life in the first place, I don't think that it would be such a hard pull to bring him back into, teenagers act out normal teenage behavior, but it wouldn't be so hard to pull him back. That's number one. But if we're coming from the perspective, we're reactionary, dad wasn't there, and he needs to step back in to support mom in order to get her to where he needs to be. I think the biggest part is that a lot of our boys feel like they haven't been seen. They're not heard. They're not validated. They're not understood. So if he can come from that perspective to validate his son, to let him know I understand, and also being able to value him and give him direction that's age appropriate. You can't come back into your son's life at 17 telling him we're going to sit down and eat milk and cookies and this is the way it's going to be. You have to be able to cater to his needs at the specific age that he's at. So, another thing you spoke about earlier in your monologue was this idea of rites of passage. Again, as African people, we come from a collective culture where a tribal culture where we used to have rites of passage, so a boy knew where he stood in his community and when he became a man. If we could find a way to support our young men and teach them along the way and give them some type of tangible
a satisfaction or something that we could show them, like, you've done it. In America, we could say that the high school diploma is that tangible gratification. But something within our community, and that may be where the churches step in, where the family steps in, to give him that rite of passage to say, we see you, we trust you, we know, we value you, and we see that you are ready to make that next step to manhood.
Exactly. Now, let me say this, and I wrote a book entitled Let Us Make a Goddamn Man. I'm not cussing, Ms. Carter, but that's the title of the book. Let Us Make a Goddamn Man, Antidotes for the Identity Crisis of the Afro Male. And in there, mm-hmm. I specifically point out the fact that when God made man with the ability to procreate and make life, He set him up to become a sacrosanct monarch, in other words, a father priest in his home.
Hmm.
What a lot of boys are missing is the spiritual instruction and element and connection to their health and their strength in the universe, because they don't have mm-hmm. father priests. Culturally, I believe we have to get to that point where we establish a basis for instruction on becoming a father priest in the life of your children, both boys and girls, but especially boys. If you don't have it, gangster disciples or the Crips or the Bloods or the Vice Lords or whatever is out there, right? Dope.
Sure.
Pastor Waller would tell you about them dope boys that get you. Somebody going to play that role for you. Am I wrong about that, Pastor Waller?
No, you're right on time with that, because that's what it is. I mean, you have to be aware that it's either going to be either or. There's no
right.
in between.
You there ain't no that, in between.
No, it's not no in between, man. I mean, I found that out, you know, through my experience, that it was no in between. You know, in other words, they choose you this day who you would serve. And when you
right.
desire, you know, something that you see that's going on before you, and you know, you're young and inexperienced and you don't know any better, and, you know, opportunities like that show up. Someone may present something to you, and you think that's an easy, fast way to come up with a dollar. And,
right.
you know, and you never tried it before, and you tried and like it, and you're not thinking consequences or anything. You're just thinking a dollar. And so, you know, things like that take place. And, yeah, and before you know it, man, you enter into a style that has to do with bondage in many areas. Whether it's drinking, whether it's smoking, whether it's whatever it is that you try first, that bondage
yeah.
is right there, snatches you up. Well, that's what
Absolutely.
Happened to me. And so, yes, man, I mean, you know, the number one thing is it's no in between.
Right.
You know?
I totally agree with that. And I feel like there has to be a practical way of reaching these young men. God, and I'm a God-fearing woman. I think that's absolutely amazing. And again, these are children who are in the midst of poverty. If the church can find a way to go into these, you have thousands of mega churches who get in
yeah.
church every day. I'm sorry, I'm just saying it. And they see it and on Sunday. But they're not in these communities helping these children. If I listen to the man who's going to put food in my stomach at the end of the day.
Mm.
So if these churches can provide that for these children, go out there, go into the communities. If the parents get the understanding, then they pass it down to their children. So there were resources provided from the church. If we say we want our children to have a understanding and a background behind God, if the church went out into the community and provided these resources, then the children could say, oh, maybe, you know what, that same man that was preaching to me, he came to my house and he gave my mama some food, not the social worker. Because in their mind, the
right.
social worker is God, because that's the one who's feeding them.
Sure.
She's
sure.
saying
something
sure.
now.
Can y'all hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can y'all hear me now? I've learned some very valuable information that YouTube has been a big part of the situation too, because For one, they have all different documents on there, and one of them is who is God, because for one, they have hidden colors on there, and hidden colors is talking about that Jesus wasn't his name and different things like that. So these kids are confused. And then the thing about it is you can get to the parents, but it ain't about getting to the parents. It's about getting to the children, because some of the parents' matters are already made up.
Okay.
Do that make a lot of sense? Because some of them have a reprobative mind.
Yeah. I follow where you're going, Nicole. I follow where you're going. Oh, it looked like we lost Nicole there. Cecilia.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully Nicole will get back with us there. I got the last question I want to ask you before we leave. And Pastor Wallace, stand by. Stand by. This may get hot and heavy.
Sir.
I may need you to help me run up out of here. Here's the text. Here's the text, Ms. Carter. And ye fathers.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Ms. Carter.
Yes, sir.
Should we go and arrest everybody that made a baby with some female and hold them accountable?
In the ideal situation, that would be amazing. In the ideal situation, you know, and I'm being very sarcastic here, but some of the situations I see, I think, you know, like people should have a test on whether or not they should be tested before they're allowed to have children, because some of the circumstances that these people put these children in, it's crazy. Now, of course, of course, we can't do that, but I think that it's important that it not be on the back of the woman. We talk a lot about the mother and what she's doing to her son. She's doing that out of distress. She's doing that as her last option because she does not have any help coming from anywhere else. So I think it's important that we, as we are teaching our sons how to be men, we teach them also how to be responsible people, period. Manhood, womanhood, responsibility is if you create a problem, if you create, and not the children are a problem, but if you create a situation, you take care of it, period.
Wow. Hello.
That takes of the responsibility off of the mother. And that also, now if we go back to the mother also too, you have to be able to discern, if we talking about the Bible, we talk about the man that's the head of the household. I get to pick my head. If he proves to me that he cannot provide for me or does not have a job, nor does he want a job, I'm not going to have a child by him.
Absolutely.
Wow. Hello.
Well,
I like that.
Well stated. Well stated. Can I define what a goddamn man is?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
God is the creator, or Elohim in the Hebrew, of the universe, right? All power. Am means to exist in the past, present, and the future. And a man is the right hand of God in the earth, according to Genesis. So a goddamn man is one who exists as God's instrument and tool in the earth. Our problem is you got little boys making babies, but we ain't got enough goddamn men. I wish I had a whip.
That's true.
That's absolutely true.
So this is the work we got to put in. Pastor Waller, what about it?
There is a lot of work to be done. I mean, that's true. I heard young lady say some things that I am very inspired by, because when she said that there's a lot of churches, that means that they ought to be utilized. And if the church, apparently if the church has something, and if they don't have it, they cannot utilize it. But why are the doors open on that particular day and then not have nothing to offer? You know, so if you're not making a noise, you know, and I know it says make a joyful noise unto the Lord, you know, and I understand that, But that's easy to do when you're in church. But what about those people that she was talking about on the outside? Those people that are hurting, those people that are crying out, you know? And that's why I always still say and believe that if they come out of those buildings, man, and then people know who don't know, which is some of the people who are, as you say, bringing them kids up without understanding, you know, children having children. But if they get the information that comes from the Bible, which was brought to them, you know, it probably would make a difference. But if it's not brought to them, then they would never know. They only go for what they know, you know. And that's just like, I'll give you a good example. I had this wisdom for what I heard, man. I didn't know nothing about the Bible, so I had to go for what I knew. And I didn't know nothing. But if I tried, man, it became me. I said, let me try this. And all of a sudden, I liked it, you know, and there I was. And it doesn't matter how many more people are doing the same thing in many areas, maybe not trying the same thing I tried. But the enemy, I've always said this with you, it's called a trap.
Right.
You know, and that trap does not exclude anyone. You know, it's welcome anybody. Come on into this trap, and then you'll do what I say. And that's one of the kind of mentalities that I learned. Whatever he told me to do, I remember, I would do it, whether I liked it or not. You know, and it's amazing that it's still going on. And so we have to do something about it and utilize the power that's supposed to be inside the church, which is the body, the people.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. You don't supposed to keep it to yourself. You don't supposed to be in there and just sing and rejoice and have a good time. And then suddenly you leave out, you think nothing about the people that you ride by or that you walk by or that you see. Could it be because you don't have any power? Could it be because you don't know anything about what the Word of God says? Or could it be you're just in there playing church? You know, it's a possibility, man. You know, but if you got something, you're not going to hold back on people, man, that's hurting out there now. You know, and that's just the way I feel about it.
Well, okay. We got about 7 minutes here before it's time for us to go. And what I'd like to do is, Nicole, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Give us a final thought before we go. Nicole, give us a final thought before we go, and we're going to get to our guest and let her kind of wrap up our conversation before we get out of here. Nicole, right quick, a final thought.
Well, at this present time, you know, I was thinking, like, you know, I think about how the older people have been in the church for 60 and 70 years, and they sit in there and everything. And like she been saying, you know, the people outside the church as well, they need to help it, not inside the church. And I wish the people will come out of the building and help the people outside the church, because our young folks are hurting. But if we can reach our young folks, we can reach their mother. You know what I'm saying? I think that's the key. Anything is to reach the children. If we can get the kids to come to church and the mother see the change in the kids, then the mother or the father can change. I think it starts with the kids today, because you got to understand something that some of the mothers already just set in their ways, and they just feel like they feel, and sometimes it seems like ain't nothing going to move that or change that. But the kids can. I believe if you can get to the kids, you can get to the mother or the father. That's the final word that I have to say about this.
Thank you so much. We sure appreciate you joining us tonight, Ms. Nicole.
Yes, sir.
1098, final thought before we get out of here?
Well, the people in the churches, you know, as stated, when my children came into the world, it wasn't a church responsibility. It wasn't welfare responsibility. It was my responsibility, and I took care of my responsibility. I do understand that you have a lot of children out there that need help, and it goes back to what Ms. Carter was saying earlier. You know, some of them should be given a test in order to have children, but you'll be going back to Hitler. See, Hitler wasn't playing that. You know, he was circumcised, whatever you want to say, and everything. Germany wasn't playing that. But here in the United States, unfortunately, you know, if you got an IQ of 35 and 30 and 20 and 45, you can have
that's
trouble.
Another show, Outcast.
I know, I hope. I hope. I'm done.
Woo, boy, all right. Pastor Waller, what do you say, Pastor? Before we get to I'm sorry. Hold on, Pastor. We'll let you bring it up in a minute. Ms. Carter, let me give you a couple of minutes to summarize your thoughts. Thank you for coming on and being with us tonight. We have to have you again. You were a tremendous asset to our dialogue for Talk Straight. Let me give you the floor to give your final.
First of all, I want to say thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking with you all. And I would like to close by saying that it's important to create a healthy foundation for our sons and daughters in order to progress our community. Part of that is create for our sons specifically, because we're talking about them tonight, is creating a safe space for them to learn how to be men, how to so if that means going out to access other resources, if that means being a listening ear to validate them, to support them, to give them every opportunity to be a healthy, thriving man in the community, that's what we need to do. And forcing them before their time and putting responsibilities on them that they're not able to accomplish is a setup for failure. So I think that's the most important thing. The other thing that I noticed as we were talking is that the way we speak a lot about God, and one of the speakers, one of the other guests talk about that there's a trap out there for gang society or whatever to reach our youth. Well, what if we set up the same trap within the churches? What if we go out there and we provide them with their basic necessities like food, shelter, safety, and understanding, and as we give them that, just like you lead a horse to water, you bring them in and you show them where the source comes from. But we cannot do that just sitting in the pulpit and saying God is your all when God ain't coming down and helping these kids when they need help. With that, I'll close. Thank you for having me.
Right. Thank you so much. Pastor Waller, I know you're fired up, man. Look, we got 2 minutes. Give it 30 seconds,
man. Yeah, I have to briefly be able to say it, man. What is her name again?
Miss Cecilia Carter. She's a adolescent therapist out of St. Louis.
I want to thank everyone that had a chance to speak. Miss Carter, you have enlightened me with what you shared, and I want you to know that I thank you again. And the good part about that is if we don't know anything about God, then we cannot take it to the street. So I suggest that anyone, would be as I myself had to be. And that is, I had to come to myself and realize how foolish I was trusting me. And so the word says in the book of Matthew chapter 11 and verse number 29, he says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. So if we start to learn of him, then we would know what to do to get out there to help the people. And I just want to thank you again for saying that. It means a lot. Come out of the pulpit. If you learn something in church, take it to the streets, and you'll be amazed on what may happen. You never know until you try. Mm. Glory to God.
Thank you.
You got 60 seconds here. I want to encourage you to go to my website, www.bfcinstitute.com. Go to the contact, and in the back store there, you'll find the workbook that we made reference to tonight, a framework for following instructions, understanding the male growth process. Ms. Carter, I look forward to seeing you when I get to St. Louis. All right?
Yes, sir.
And I want you to turn it up just like you did tonight.
Yes, sir.
We appreciate you.
Thank you.
And Outcast, thank you, man. Nicole, God bless you. God bless you.
Yes,
as always, we're going to have to leave now. I hate. I know you want to leave, but I refuse to let you go. But we thank you all. We'll be back next Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we bid you farewell.
Yeah. Good night.